You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah, all right now. We are ready to go with Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We got a great episode because the boys are rolling here in L.A., getting dubs back-to-back. Here we go. So we're talking about the Lizotte injury. We're talking about Trevor Moore heating up. We're going to be talking about some international play, the line changes. Get in the chat, like, and subscribe. Let's go. Whoa, the chat has been buzzing. Everybody was here waiting on pins and needles. Thank you guys for coming in early. Thank you guys for being patient. I know it is Thanksgiving holiday. You guys are probably, in a dark room away from your family because you have to listen to Hockey Royalty. So we really appreciate that. Right now, the boys are buzzing. We're buzzing. But how are you guys doing, Russ and Joe? How are you guys doing?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Yeah, when I'm kind of feeling down throughout the day or anything like that, I just go to that good old NHL.com, check out those standings, and see our boys sitting at 11-3-3. It's a good times in LA, and especially when you see what's going on in Edmonton. So that kind of is the cherry on top. But how you doing, Joe?
I was going to say, I'm not doing too bad. I was going to say, I thought you were going to go. I log into the NHL app and just take a look at the latest Edmonton Oilers score, and that usually makes things nice and well. Yeah, that's what a mess that's going on there. But no, I'm doing well. Got the high school pullover on today. We've got first game is coming up Friday day after Thanksgiving, so we're ready to rock. Boys are buzzing. So hockey season is here, full go now. It is official. So ready to rock. Randon, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Worked today, got a hunk of metal out there making some money, and now just getting ready for tomorrow. Brothers are coming over. I'm gonna set up another TV in the living room. So we're gonna get dual TVs going. So game on one. We're gonna be playing some Chell on the other. Trying to take the Kings to the Cup there tomorrow during the day. Gonna be cooking. I'm gonna try to get both of them into a little polar plunge. See if they're man enough to handle the cold. Nice. And it's gonna be good, man. It's gonna be good. Let's get into the chat here. NBN Pineapple was the first one in here. At 1:04 p.m., right after we posted this bad boy, go Kings, go. I like it. I like it. Leave coming in. Hey, all, Oilers lost. Yes, we know. We like it. We like it. Leave coming here. Take your time. Yeah, we appreciate the patience. Jacob coming in here, finally making one of these things live. And the Kings are a wagon, ? I think they might be. Lots of thankful for this year. Go Kings, go. Kings, I'll see you when I see you. He's in the chat ready to go. I think we got any more down here. I know a couple people are just chalking. Richie Rich, hey, fellas, Kings Rule, let's go. How's it going, guys, from Holden 92? Noah, finally able to catch a live show again. What's up, everyone? I like it. I like it here. So we got a lot of stuff going on. Let's start with the game recaps. Big games. I mean, obviously, the recent win in Arizona, keeping the undefeated streak on the road alive that will be tested against the Ducks here later this week. Pretty big game there. I know that it was big for a lot of reasons. We talked on the last pod that Copley had something to prove. Definitely came in there and stopped some pucks there, some key saves in that matchup. But the Kings pretty much handled it from front to back. You even heard the Arizona Coyotes reporter saying at the end that the Kings are elite. Did you guys feel that the Kings really handled all phases of the game this time and they're really hitting the stride consistently with good games this season?
I think the St. Louis game, just kind of go back to the one on Saturday real quick. I mean, that one was a game where I felt like I know McClellan afterwards said that he would have liked them to kind of step on the throats a little bit more in the second period. And I kind of saw it. Like, I don't know if you guys saw, but I was actually in the crowd watching the game, and I was sitting on the opposite end of where all the Kings' goals were in the first period. So that was kind of bittersweet, but it was obviously still fun. At the first period, it's funny, the last two games I've been to where I've sat in the crowd, whereas last year when they beat the Coyotes at home and they scored 5 goals in the first period, and it still ended up being a close game. I was at that game, and then this game against the Blues where they scored 4 goals in the first period. So this one was a little bit more fun because they were able to keep the lead throughout the whole game. And, I mean, man, there's some of the plays they were making in the first. I thought it was just a good overall game. But just to kind of look back at the Arizona one, I thought there were stretches where it's like they really had to lean on Copley almost. I mean, there was a few breakaways to start off in the first period. I mean, yeah, they were looking pretty good in terms of that. Quint Byfield assist was beautiful. Trevor Moore was on his horse again. And there were some good plays that were being made in the offensive zone. But, I mean, I thought there were a little bit of breakdowns here and there. I mean, but overall, I just love that it was kind of a rallying cry for the team to get behind Phoenix Copley and them and McClellan afterwards talking about how they had this game penciled in for Copley to start, especially with what happened with him in the last time he started in Arizona getting pulled. So for the team to kind of rally behind Copley and get this win for him and show that they haven't wavered in their confidence from him, because that was a big question mark after his last start against Pittsburgh, was what can Phoenix Copley continue to bring to this team. And for him to come out and have that showing just gives a lot of confidence to the players, the coaching staff, and more importantly, probably the fans too, who are probably wondering, like, okay, what's going to happen with Cam Talbot? Is he going to have to play 50-plus games now in the season? Doesn't really seem that way if Copley's playing like this.
Let me edge your question here, Joe, a little bit into a different direction, if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah.
So they start out with a 2-1 win over Florida. Florida, obviously, deep into the playoffs last year, cup run and everything like that. So a quality win there, and then a statement win with Russ. And they're winning. It seems like they're winning in different facets. What are you seeing from this team, not only being able to score in bunches, but as you alluded to on the last podcast, one an elite penalty kill unit right now, second in the league. How are you seeing this team mold and being able to win in different facets?
Well, you just hit the nail on the head. They can win it in all different facets. And if that means, you know, their power play isn't like a top five power play in the league like it was last year, but we're starting to see it. I mean, we saw going back to that St. Louis game, Quentin Byfield now is getting some time in that top unit, Pierre-Luc Dubois back on the second unit. And that has paid some dividends here early. But the biggest thing for me, though, is we've talked about the depth on this team. Is it just, you know, the last game against Arizona, if you look at the stats for the Kopitar line from the shot attempts and expected goals, not a good game, but it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter because they come at you in waves. So if one line doesn't have it, there's a line or two does. They can catch you shorthanded. We've seen shorthanded goals these last couple of games. Trevor Moore, Adrian Kempe, the defense group. I mean, we've talked about how there's been games where Doughty, Anderson have kind of lagged behind a bit. There's Gavrikov and Roy. Englund and Spence is apparently an incredible pair now. There's not really any at this point. Right, like as we head into Thanksgiving here, there just hasn't been like a chink in the armor, because if one line doesn't have it, somebody else does. They can beat you off the rush. They've been good on the forecheck. Their D zone has been, they're one of the best expected goals against teams in the NHL once again. And the biggest takeaway for me over these last couple of games is I look at the St. Louis game and the Kings, you know, I think you had brought up a question about are the Kings a wagon and whatnot. And it's like, it got to a point where heading into that St. Louis game, that was like the first time this season was like, okay, yeah, the Kings are going to win tonight. Like, it's just, they've gotten to a point where it's just like, you're now just expecting them to win these games, right? And you're kind of marking your calendar for, you know, the Vegases or, you know, these top teams in the league, the Bostons down the road, Carolina, New Jersey. I would say Edmonton, but I don't know that counts anymore, you know, but you're just expecting them to win games because of that depth, because how they're coming at you in waves. And lastly, that Phoenix Copley start was huge. You know, I know there's a lot of people talking about bringing, you know, wanting Rittich to come up. And I still think it was too early for Rittich to come up because you got to give Copley a few more starts. They need Phoenix Copley. They can't abandon him yet. They need him to figure it out and get right. And I don't know, as I always say, like, he had a good start against Arizona. That doesn't mean his next start's going to be good. It's just, let's just take it for what it is. It's a really good start. He needed it. The team needed it. And what a way to end kind of, what was it? Those two games in a short span there, three games dating back to last week. It's another heck of a run this team's on.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to look at this team and how they're winning in multiple facets, each line stepping up different games. I really want to get into it. And we alluded to it a lot last week with the Byfield thing. Byfield obviously showed that ridiculous apple the other night. His skating's been full on par. He's getting more leash now, not only on the 5-on-5, he's being awarded with better play on the power play. He's on pace for over 70 plus points right now. Obviously my goal was 60, so well above that. Your guys' goal was even less. He's far exceeding what hockey royalty is asking of him to start the season. With that line and Kempe starting to heat up a little bit, and Kopitar might exceed his goals, you know, for his entire career in one season, or his season high goals there. Where are we seeing this first line and how consistent they have been? I know obviously you said, Joe, that on Arizona. Does it give you guys confidence in April and May that we have a line that could potentially show up every single night? And it's something that we don't have to really worry about.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, because it's a line that could play in all areas of the ice when you have a player like Anze Kopitar in the middle. I mean, and especially with – I mean, Quinton Byfield, obviously, I think is been the biggest breakout player for the Kings. I think that would be an obvious. But in terms on the other side, Adrian Kempe, I mean, this guy is just – he's ridiculous. He's an elite player in the NHL, and I think he's going to turn into be one of the top 10 wingers in the NHL, if he's not considered that already. I mean, that shorthanded goal that he scored against the Blues, it's crazy because we, like, you just think, like, of Kempe as this, like, sniper who's got this lethal wrist shot from the circle. But for him to go in and just dangle and have that backhand roof, man, that was just pure filth. And that was just a play that was created just off himself. He kind of just poked the puck off the boards, was able to use the speed, get the separation, and then make the move. So, I mean, you're seeing a line, and we could talk about all the lines, and it's almost like you can mention this with every single line on the Kings, but especially with that first line, when you have a player in the middle like Kopitar, who's so elite on that two-way mode on the ice, whatever, and with Quinton Byfield, his playmaking ability that's become so apparent in these last few games, and to add Kempe to it and his scoring ability on the other side, yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. It's one of the lethal top units in the NHL.
Yeah, Randon. I mean, it's hard, especially now with how they're going. It's hard not to say yes. That, I mean, they look like they're going to be a force for all season. You obviously, you never know how things are going to play out. But to your point, yeah, they can play wherever you need them to play, or how, they'll be able to adapt. Just because if you want to play off the rush, Adrian Kempe is as good as anybody at that, and obviously Quinton Byfield has got legs for days. If you want to play more of a slow things down cycle game, Anze Kopitar can do that with anybody. And you've got Byfield to kind of fish pucks out. And now he's got the ability to make plays on top of it. As Russ said, like, this is a line that really is clicking. Now, the only, you know, where the only possible issue could come in is, like, if there's injuries down the lineup that just forces their hand to kind of shuffle things up a little bit. You know, you hope obviously that doesn't happen, but boy, if they're able to stick together, you know, we see this not all that often that you see teams have a top line and they just never get touched all season, but that's entirely possible here with how the Kings are rolling.
It's almost the whole lineup too, right? It's not even just that top line. It's the whole lineup is not even getting touched. I mean, we saw a player in the middle six come out and they just put the 13th forward right in that spot because he didn't want to touch the fourth line. So it's like, that's how good this team is. But just to kind of focus back again on that top unit, I mean, could we see Kopitar get a career high in points? It could be a possibility. He's on pace for a point per game player. It's looking like, obviously, Quinton Byfield and Kempe are up there, but man,
Kopitar's not aging. We talked about Father Time.
And better.
Kopitar has found a way to like push Father Time to the side for a second. It's like that.
If he could be Joe Pavelski later in his career, like 38, 39, the way Joe's aging well, like that's just completely possible. It's fantastic.
And with his size, and maybe the good thing for a player like Kopitar, and I'll even include somebody like, John Tavares is another one. You know, Joe Thornton played deep. Like, it's not as if speed was a huge part of their game throughout their career. Like, so if you lost that, if you lost your legs, if you lost that, you really struggled. Like, he Kopitar is so smart and he's still got the brain. He can still think it at an elite level, and his size and his vision, his hands, everything is still there. I mean, so the fact that he's not the fastest player on the ice, he never really was. So it's not anything that he has to now adapt to or change to. So, I mean, the way he's going, it certainly looks like he's got a few years left in him and some good ones at that.
Yeah. Well, I want to throw Adam up here. Adam Foskey, always dig the live chats, gents. Thanks for your hard work. Appreciate that. And if you guys can always appreciate us by hitting that like button. So get in there, hit that like button. It moves us up on the algorithms, really throws us in the mix. We want more subscribers. I thank you guys all. We crossed 700 today on a quest for 1,000. We always appreciate you guys listening to the chat here. So by way of detour, I kind of want to swing it back to the goalies because Copley gave an inspiring performance. People want to know about the future. Teresa coming in here. Who do you guys think will start in goal Friday with a back-to-back? Do you think it's going to be Copley again? Do you think he'll get a goal after that great thing? Do you want to double up and let him ride, or how do you guys figure that's going to go?
Talbot, as I said, division game, play Cam Talbot. You got the Eastern Conference team, play Phoenix Copley. That's exactly how I run it. They're both going to play. I would right now. I know Copley's coming off a good game, but Talbot's had one of the best seasons in the NHL, if we're being honest. So I would play him against the division opponent right now.
Well, he's not better than Jonathan Quick, but. I mean, but I don't know. I think it can go either way. I like the importance of the game, of it being like against the Ducks, obviously with the rival. It almost feels like this game against the Ducks, it has like this whole like the Kings are like, okay, the Kings are up there in terms of the standings, right? They're winning, whatever. And the Ducks are kind of, they have the excitement. They're kind of coming back down to earth or whatnot. It almost feels like the Kings have the opportunity to kind of big brother this team, right? To kind of show their dominance and say, hey, you guys are still on the rebuild. You had your fun. We're obviously the elite team in the Pacific Division. So I would like to see the Kings really go at it with the Ducks and kind of step on their throat a little bit and show that dominance. So I get that part in terms of having Talbot start. I just wonder too, like you have a little bit of history with Phoenix Copley and John Gibson. I mean, it wasn't nothing crazy, but could have got something. So I can see it going either way. But I think if you're trying to actually win the game, take the emotion out of it, you run with Talbot.
Yeah, I agree. Talbot and then Copley versus Montreal. That's how I think I'd roll with it.
Yeah, there. I agree.
So let's get into the next thing here. Obviously, we had the Joe's favorite player on the ice, Lizotte getting injured. No long term injury. They didn't put him on IR or anything like that. So far, I got to give credit to Dennis Burstein. Said he was on the ice today, but nothing, you know, crazy. Whether he was in lines or anything like that, just on the ice skating. So that is obviously a good sign. Whether he'll play after the break, we don't know. They decided to go with Jad in the game, put Lewis at center, which was kind of odd to me considering he's played wing for the last decade or so. So, I mean, it just really, I mean, I guess towards the end of the career, he was playing center for the fourth line for the Kings, but regardless, I thought Jad would have just, like we talked about, just slotted in and kept everybody else the same. Mm-hmm. I guess it doesn't really matter in the Kings system because they play that 4-1-2-3 forward, on the position there. So, let's just start with that line. What did you think was the impact felt without Lizotte on that fourth line? Did they just play equally? Did they play as good, but in a different way? How did you guys view the fourth line there?
I think it started a little slow. Just to kind
first
of
ship was rough.
That first ship, yeah, was pretty bad. I mean, Anderson Dolan, it's tough because thing with Jad is like he's such a like just a good genuine guy that like he'll coaches love him. McClellan loves him. You talked about it. I mean, I remember him talking about him last year where it was just Jad was kind of producing a little bit and kind of on fire, but there weren't really any injuries, so you couldn't really find a spot in the lineup for him. And even McClellan was talking about how it's tough to make decisions and leave a player like that out of the lineup. And that first shift, yeah, like Joe said, like it was rough against Arizona. But I thought they kind of turned it up a little bit after that. I saw some good moments from Jad. It's not like, I mean, Lizotte is a really – we know how good Lizotte is and his impact on the ice. So to lose a player like that, I mean, we saw it in the game against St. Louis, the goal he scored – where, I mean, he got kind of got away with a little bit of a slash, but helped create a play, create a turnover. And I think his play also, Carl Grundstrom, too, has kind of elevated his game quite a bit. So those three have been really, like, to quote Todd McClellan, they've been money throughout the year. So to lose a player like Lizotte hurts. But, I mean, Grundstrom and Lewis, I think they can kind of help carry the weight of that loss. Hopefully Lizotte isn't out too long. I mean, there hasn't been a call-up, so maybe mm-hmm. they're expecting him to play or at least just roll with Jared Anderson Dolan from the time being. So hopefully we don't see Lizotte miss too much.
I mean, Lizotte is, you know, potentially a pretty significant loss if it's over a long term. And I don't mean to, you know, overstate, I guess, a fourth line player. But when we talk about the reason the Kings have been so good, it's they come at you in waves and their depth is so important and all that stuff. So in a short stint, I'm not too concerned. I would be more upset if it was a longer term. And I wouldn't think that I don't think anyways they would go with this fourth line if it is a long-term thing, but I guess we'll see. And shoot. So after that first shift, the first shift was rough. But man, you look at what they did. I mean, they only played 6 minutes and 22 seconds together. This is per natural stat trick. 9-3 in shot attempts. They had an edge of 8-3 in scoring chances and 5-1 in high danger chances. Mission accomplished. They did their job. They totally annihilated it. They were out against Nick Bjugstad a lot, and that did not go well for Bjugstad. So Lewis had an 11-1 in shot attempts against Nick Bjugstad in 2 minutes and 30 seconds. So that did a lot of the damage. So it's just, yeah, like that line. Lizzo is going back to Lizotte, he's a crucial part to this team into that fourth line, and that's a great one game against Arizona, and if they can continue that on in his absence, that's great. But boy, I think Lizotte is that impactful of a fourth line player that that is an impactful injury if it's long term. So hopefully it's not.
Esper coming in here, does any other team in the league miss a fourth liner like we do?
When it's like Lizotte, yeah.
Maybe Vegas. I think I keep going back to Vegas. Like that can, offhand, that's the only team. Not I shouldn't say the only team, but one of the few teams with like a fourth line that's like that. Like Nick Roy's really good. Like yeah. That's
the Islanders have rolled out the same fourth line for like the last 15 years. But I mean,
the difference between that and their first line. That's the problem for the
exactly, Islanders. But. The Lizotte line, they lead the team in expected goal share for money puck. So it's not like, and the thing is too, it's not like they're just getting the offensive zone starts too. That's what's so crazy is usually with fourth lines, it's like, all right, we got the icing. Let's just throw the fourth line out there. They can eat like 30, 45 seconds and then we'll get the big boys back out there. But yet, they're matching up Lizotte against like the other team's top units and throwing the Dubois line or the no line out there for us offensive zone chances, which is just, that just attributes to the team's depth, right? When you have that fourth line that can match up against another team's top unit and save your scoring lines for the other team's bottom six lines, huge.
Yeah. And you know, I've talked about the shot contributions and Lizotte is a favorite there. He's second on the Kings in shot assists per 60 and Carl Grundstrom fourth on the Kings shot contributions per 60. So it's like they're involved too in terms of the offensive side of it. Two of them are involved. Grundstrom's third on the team in shot attempts per 60. So yeah, like they're doing it at both ends of the ice as a group, and different guys are chipping in different ways, and it's great to see.
Yeah, let's get into the second part of this here, and obviously we haven't heard of any call-ups yet, but it's a possibility. Both the Rain and the Kings play Friday. The Rain play the Barracuda on both Friday and Saturday. So if a call were to happen, it'd probably be tomorrow or maybe Friday morning. I don't know how practice works. Russ, do they have to call somebody up in order for them to practice with the team? How does that?
I think so, yeah, because most call-ups happen before they step on the ice, so I would believe so. I'm not sure if they're actually practicing tomorrow. I have to check, but yeah, like you said, the fact that there wasn't any call-up today, maybe that kind of bodes well for his availability for Friday and Saturday. I just don't know. Like, I would expect them, if he is available, probably just play him one of those games and have Jared Anderson Dolan play the other one, kind of keep him fresh. But the fact that he's actually skating, not turning out here without the team, is a good sign.
Yeah. I know there's a couple call-ups we've been seeing on Twitter. Obviously, Turcotte is back on fire. Again, a point-per-game player with the team. So, you know, some people are like, hey, let's slot him in. You know, let's give him a, you know, maybe a cup of coffee this weekend, a little two-game swing. And then Steven right here is coming in with a Sammy Fagimo. What the F? Just lighting it up down there. I think he's got 5 goals in 4 games. Where, if there was a call up between those two guys, are you guys taking Turcotte with a point per game, giving him 2 games up in the league? Is that not enough, knowing that Lizotte might be back soon enough and you just keep him down? Is it Fagimo because the fact that it might only be 2 games? He's already been playing in the NHL with Nashville. He played more than a cup of coffee last year. If they had to call somebody up or they were to call somebody up, how do you kind of view that situation?
I think if Lizotte is only going to miss these 2 games, I think you just roll with Jared Anderson Dolan. But if you have to call somebody up and Lizotte could miss potentially a longer term, I think it's Turcotte's time to shine, right? I think he's kind of earned that opportunity. It's tough because I think about it and just kind of focus on the Ontario Reign, and hopefully the best is with Tobias Bjornfoot because he took a really rough hit and he got to be stretchered off. So prayers for Bjornfoot. It sounds like it was just – he went to the hospital as precautionary and tests are good. So hopefully everything's good on Toby's end. But in terms of the Rain, it's weird because that team is just, it feels like they're really gelling and kind of coming together really well and playing really good hockey. If you guys follow Kyle Garcia, our Rain guy on Twitter at Kopitar4HOF, he's going to all the games and he's kind of reporting a lot of good things and hearing great things in terms of a lot of the young players kind of gelling and growing chemistry together, which is what you want to see when you have a player like Brant Clark on that team, Alex Turcotte, Art Kromiak, all these young players that are mixed in with your TJ Tynans, Charles Hudon, Kevin Connaughtans, all these older guys. But I mean, I think the way that Alex Turcotte has played, if there's a spot that's available for 5 or so games, you give it to him.
I agree. I think it's Turcotte. And a big reason is the position. I mean, I know they moved Lewis to center last game, but you know, I think in a perfect world, if you're going to call somebody up, it's to play center in place of Lizotte. And so for me, that would be Turcotte. And listen, all we've been asking for Turcotte is to be healthy, because when he has been healthy, he's been pretty productive. And we're seeing it again this year. And he had a really good camp. He's continued that on into the season in the AHL. I would say if Lizotte were to miss time, that he's earned the call up to get an opportunity. Turcotte, that is.
Yeah, I agree there. I know there's some they're hinting out here. I don't know if this is right, but I'll throw it up here. Green said not right now, due to the 30-day rule, Jad and Fagimo, I believe, are still protected. I know there is a rule where once you've been sent down, you have a certain kind of like a grace period that you don't have to be sent down again. I don't know what that is, but either way, I think you could make a case either or, right? I mean, Demo's lighting it up. You could get a goal scorer in there. Turcotte has been and you have Turcotte right there. So and you know, it's something that I think if Turcotte were to get a chance, it should be more than a weekend. Like, it should be, like you said, a 5-10 game stint, right? To where it's not the pressure of, hey, I have to go in and this is my only chance, and you know, that type of thing, to where he can really settle in that kind of aspect. So first off, Rich, appreciate it, man. Deftones, love them. I love it. So let's get into, we were concerned about the line, mainly the Dubois line. Let's revisit kind of these line combos and how they performed. Now it's a, you know, such a large sample size of 2 games, but you know, a couple games here, but let's kind of dive in. Joe, you had a lot of the numbers from the game, so I'm going to start with you. How did that Dubois line look, and not only expect a goal share, but zone entries? How are they gelling as a line? What do the stats say, and what do your eyes say?
Yeah, so that line has done really well. And for me, the kind of the, I don't know, I guess, wild card, if you will, is I wanted somebody a little bit more of a play driver, I guess, for lack of a better term. And that's what I looked at with Trevor Moore. So I wanted somebody like a Trevor Moore alongside Pierre-Luc Dubois and Arthur Kaliev. Like, I really liked that fit. Because I don't know enough yet about what Alex Laferriere's game is to know kind of where he sits in that. But we're really starting to see it. I mean, and I'm telling you, like, you mentioned the zone entries and tracking some of these. I've got half the season done, so I haven't done all of them yet. But, boy, Laferriere is a zone entry machine. He's has as many, whether it's control carry-ins and controlled entries, he's a big part of that, but it's like the puck is going into the zone through him so often. But then at the same time, that line in general, because you look at Pierre-Luc Dubois, he dominates possession through the neutral zone, and which is what we expected. It's kind of interesting just to actually go through the process and watch it all play out, because I mean, through the games I've tracked, he is incredible when it comes to controlling the blue line with the puck in the zone. So it's really kind of worked out well, because it's almost as if Laferriere is doing a lot through the neutral zone, what I kind of would have expected Trevor Moore to do. So he's kind of getting that. So the idea is kind of working the same. It's just Laferriere has really had a kind of a bit of a resurgence after that one game breather. So I think that's what's really, really helping making this line click, is having both those guys be threats when it comes to the zone entries. And Kaliev is a very much a dump and chase player, because I get the sense that he doesn't want to make that neutral zone mistake. He says, just let me get it in and I'll do my work when I'm actually in the zone. I'll have somebody feed me the puck and I'll do my job there. And Laferriere's done a nice job in terms of like getting in on forechecks and winning puck battles and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that line is really, really come along. I had questions about it, just because I just didn't know with the two young guys and where Laferriere's game was going to go. But it looks great these last few games for sure.
Russ, with the two opponents coming up, obviously the Ducks in Montreal, how do you think that line can fare versus, obviously both teams are young and rebuilding? Is it really that time with what Joe said about Dubois and Laferriere to be able to control the neutral zone, control the zone entries, and really put some pressure on some of these younger teams?
Yeah, for sure. I think Alex Laferriere would probably feel more comfortable against the Ducks, because he's played against quite a few of them throughout the preseason and training camp, even going back to the rookie faceoff. But I think this would be a good time for Pierre Dubois to kind of show his dominance and his size against the Ducks, because this will be his first game against Anaheim, one of the big rivals of the Kings. So he's got the big acquisition in Dubois. Let's see what you can do against a team like the Ducks. So I think it was weird, because the game against Florida where they took Laferriere out, I was kind of questioning the decision to play Jared Anderson Dolan next to Dubois and Kaliev. I'm just like, I don't know how that's going to fare. I mean, I feel like Dubois needs a little bit more of a play driver next to him, even though he can kind of drive play himself, like Joe just mentioned, through the neutral zone. But the thing with what we've seen, like Joe just mentioned too, with Kaliev, is he's not necessarily that player too. So if you take both of those players away from Dubois, then he's kind of left to do it himself. And we didn't really see that happen throughout the Florida game. I saw Dubois kind of just be out there, and unfortunately he had that one run into the post and kind of get spun around a little bit. And it's good to see he was healthy after that. But I thought that game was just a little bit lackluster in terms of those three. But once Laferriere came back and had that game off, these last two games he's been in, he's looked just like the player we saw at the beginning of the season, probably even better. And those three, that goal that they scored against St. Louis with that Dubois one-timer when he went on his knee. I mean, that was beautiful.
Ooh, money.
And Nick Nixon's call on that was just perfect. Just, that's NHL hockey, baby. Maybe took a little bit of that from John Forsman, yeah. But I mean, I think that Nixon call, the way he kind of said it too, it was like, man, that was perfect. But if you look at that play in its entirety, it starts with Laferriere along the boards in his own zone. He chips it up. to right on the stick to Jordan Spence. And Jordan Spence, I mean, man, this this guy is so good. Jordan Spence, this guy's going to be a player in the NHL, I'm telling you. And it's like making me cringe see that he's so good because, like, I'm, like, seeing my hopes and dreams of Matt Roy staying, like, drift away because of the way Jordan Spence has been playing. I'm like, man, I just – Matt Roy, I know, is going to be gone because Jordan Spence has been playing so good. But, yeah, that play starts with Spence coming up the middle, feeds it off to Dubois, Dubois to Kaliev, right back to Dubois. And I love that presence in mind for Kaliev to have that kind of one-touch pass back to Dubois. That was probably one of the prettiest goals that we've seen the Kings score this year. Besides maybe the Quinn Byfield goal, he topped it just right after that in the next game. But, I mean, those three kind of meshing together have looked pretty good this year, so or these last two games. So hopefully we see that continue this upcoming back-to-back.
Who needed a goal more than PLD?
Seriously, yeah.
Like, that game, you saw funny. His face. He was just like, yes. You know, like.
Yeah, I mean, that game, it's funny. Someone mentioned, like, all the goals that were scored in the first period, if you think about it, Fiala, Byfield. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Fiala got one in a second, but Byfield. Dubois, like all players that you felt like needed goals or needed to start scoring, and they almost all got it out of the way in that St. Louis game.
Yeah, I knew that because my brothers and I said that exact same thing in the chat. Like, this is eerie. Like, all these guys are scoring when they need it. You know,
I'm glad you're talking about that St. Louis game. I pulled up the sheet and Laferriere had six carry-ins and two. He had eight total controlled entries, and two uncontrolled, like two dump-ins, that's it. And Dubois had five carry-ins and two dump-ins. That line itself was just completely dominating St. Louis through the neutral zone. So, you know, you're going to be entering the zone with possession like they were. It's you're going to do damage, and they did.
Yeah, I think it's interesting with that line and how it'll work out. Obviously, we don't know if Lazat's going to be ready for the weekend. And if they will shake anything up, that third line, I don't think really – it's not really dependent on that fourth line. So we'll see. They should get some run going into the weekend off that. How has the – let's throw it up to the Danault line. We obviously thought that Fiala and PLD need to be separated because they were both kind of deferring to each other, not taking charge. You have the north-south style that is Danault and Trevor Moore. Mixing with the free range style Fiala. How has that line looked to you guys? And do they kind of seem like they pair well together with their different styles?
It's going great. I mean, Fiala is going to figure it out with whoever it is eventually. I mean, maybe it's a little
bit more,
yeah, maybe it's a little more high risk with some lines, but can we talk about how good Philippe Danault is? Like, I just feel like this guy doesn't get some of the credit or the recognition, maybe is a better word, that he deserves. My argument was they don't even need more on that line. Like, more is so good too. Like, that's why I thought the fit with Dubois would have been better, because Fiala and Danault, they'll carry anybody, and more doesn't need to be carried. So that was my part of my logic for moving them. But I mean, Philippe Danault is so good, and Randon, to kind of, you know, tie it into a little bit of a bow, the top three players in shot contributions per 60 right now through 17 games. And I know they haven't played together the entire time, but it's Trevor Moore, Kevin Fiala, and Philippe Danault. So a lot of activity is going to be happening when those three are
out of creation.
Yes.
Is it possible that one team could have two players in the top five in Selkie voting at the end of the year? Because it's certainly looking like it. The Kings could have that with Danault and Kopitar. I mean, Danault, it just feels like, yeah, Moore's getting all the scoring. Fiala's maybe a little bit more flashier. But Danault's right there in all those plays. He's either on the score sheet passing the puck to Moore or getting assist on Fiala's goals, whatever he's doing. Danault's right there involved in all the plays that are happening. So it's like just an underrated part of his game. You think about Phil Danault, like we're talking about Quinton Byfield's breakout. Andre Kopitar's still going. The fourth line just chugging along, Dubois, Kaliev, all these players, and then Phil Danault, what he does best, just keeping it going. And I mean, man, that's just such a valuable contract to have. That just we haven't seen Rob Blake give out so many free agent deals. There's been a lot of acquisitions. I think the Danault one is probably the biggest one, and it has just been a nail hit on the head in terms of
he you know, like, look back at this, right? Yeah, just kind of piggybacking off of that, Russ, you mentioned Rob Blake. And it's like, you look back at Danault, why did they had a lot of people scratching heads at that, because he wasn't a point producer. He didn't do a whole lot. He didn't score. What did he do? Look at his underlying numbers, drove play. Kevin Fiala was a little bit different because he did both. Why did they sign Trevor Moore to the extension? Look under the hood. He's driving play. Why does Carl Grundstrom keep getting opportunities? Keep looking a little bit deeper. Look what he's doing. Look at his zone entries. Look at his shot contributions. Like,
because he's savage, Joe. That's why he keeps getting
up. His goals per 60.
Exactly. It's like they're really doing a nice job of recognizing, you know, certain players that do well. And then they've done a fantastic job on the back end of finding players that fit their system, players that maybe man for man or individual talent wise, you know, leave some to be desired, but you put them in the McClellan and the 1-3-1 and the King system, they just flourish. So, I mean, a team that is using, you know, whether it's, you know, analytics or information or however you want to call it, I mean, because you're getting some guys to pretty good contracts too, for the most part. I think the only contract right now that is really you could question Rob Blake on is, well, and it's too early to really say, is the Dubois contract. But I, Fiala's a win. Deneau is a win. Kempe, like all of these contracts, he's done a really nice job with. So, and again, it's just because that you look a little bit deeper and you can find these diamonds in the rough, and the Kings got a bunch of them. Deneau, they got him coming off a quote unquote bad year, yet all of his underlings were fantastic. They said, thank you very much. You know, and Victor Arvidsson's another. I know he's hurt, so we're not really even an opportunity to talk about it. But, like, just so on, so on. Like, Blake, just he's done a nice job. He's done a nice job of finding the right fits.
Leap comes in here with the Kings analytics era. I think I don't want to equate it to baseball, but it kind of, like, the first thing I thought about was Moneyball. And, like, now with all these advanced statistics out there and different creations and shot contributions and all this kind of stuff that we're charting, like, is this going to be more used in the GMships of finding guys that may not be, like, high producers, right? I mean, they got Victor Arvidsson off an injury for a second and a third, and he was getting paid practically nothing. The $5-plus million that they're paying Deneau seems pennies now. Obviously, I was very against the Trevor Moore length in time, and I've been proven wrong so far this season, gladly. Like, you look at all these guys that are, like, nobody thought Andreas Englund would even make the roster, and he's fitting perfectly in with Jordan Spence. Is all these underlying metrics going to be going forward something that teams are looking at, and it's not just going to be about goals and apples when it comes into how you sign players?
The smart ones. I mean, Russ said it a couple episodes ago. There's a reason why every NHL organization has an analytics department. You know, they're not going to be the ones to make the final decision. They're going to make their recommendations, but you have to have a GM that's willing to listen to it. And, you know, that GM can't be going out and, I don't know, signing John Klingberg. Like, that's not going to work. So you have to have the people in place that are making the decisions that are willing to listen and make these calls based on the recommendations, but ultimately it's going to be their call. But yeah, I mean, all these teams have analytics departments. The smart ones are going to be looking, and they all have, listen, a lot of the stuff that's public information, whether it's Natural Stat Trick, Money Puck, every one of these teams has their own private models, which I would imagine is far more advanced. Then you've got, you know, things like what Corey Schneider does is all three zones and his tracking, which is what I'm trying to, at least on the significantly smaller scale, replicate a little bit with shot contribution, slot passes, and now zone entries for the Kings, just to learn a little bit more. Cause you kind of start to pick stuff up. It's like, oh, okay. That's what really brought me to Trevor Moore a couple of years ago, was like, man, this guy's kind of involved in, like, every play. You know, it's like, there's something here. And then all of a sudden they sign him. And I was like, okay, like, it's stuff like that where that's the whole point of it. That's what's kind of fun is uncovering some of this stuff and looking at it. It's like, whoa, this guy's doing something here, or things are happening. It's just, oh, this happens to be him that's involved, like, every time. interesting, you know, even though the points weren't there, but it's like, you know what I'm saying?
It reminds me again, that scene in Moneyball where like Carlos Pena, and he's like, yeah, but Carlos Pena has 21 homers. And then he's like, but this guy gets on base. Like, this guy is always on base. Like, why are we not playing him? It's the same thing. It's like, well, you know, Trevor Moore is short and understatured, and he's never going to be a first line player, and he's never going to be this. And like, why do we, like, he's barely going to be scraping the fourth line. Yeah. But he's always in the play. Like, he's always there. He's always contributing on every single level. Oh, well, he can't play defense against the big guys. Well, yeah, he can. Like, he can. He's very technically sound. Like, it just seems, and even I, like I said, well, doubted him again this year. Like, what is that contract really going? And he's always seems to be in the play. And it just seems that the analytics over a long period of time never lie. Numbers don't lie. Men lie, women lie, numbers don't lie. And it seems that the Kings have gotten a lot of analytically sound players, and it's just about piecing them together. And so far, all the lines have been kind of roaring when it comes to that. So it's very interesting. And I think as more data comes and the new NHL stuff that's coming out, and obviously, Joe, we could only fathom what these teams are looking at on a consistent basis. But it's going to be interesting how maybe that changes not only at the NHL level, but how they view drafts and charting these kids and all this kind of stuff like that when it comes to those types of things.
Well, I think what's interesting, and Russ, maybe you may know this better than me. I don't know where I heard this. I cannot remember if I heard it or read it or whatever at this point, but is it true that at least within like, for arbitration, I think teams and agents and the parties can only use like NHL.com official data. Like, I don't know if that, I feel like I heard that. Don't quote me. So what's interesting is naturally, if you're a free agent, agents are going to do whatever, but I thought that was an interesting tidbit that they had to only use official data. Like, they can't use necessarily data from Evolving Hockey or Natural Stat Trick or All Three Zones or, you know, whatever, you know, that type of stuff. So, and to that end, I wonder if they can use their own private data. I guess I don't know enough about how that works, but it is an interesting question, Randon. And yeah, I mean, because the days of looking at, well, this is a 60 point guy, so this is what this 60 point guy, this is his range. I mean, boy, that is just archaic. Mm-hmm. And not really a good way to look at things.
It'll probably be under the next CBA for sure.
I remember going back to the Arvidsson trade. Like, it's weird just to kind of, just me personally, like you look at trades now or even acquisitions. I don't even care about points or goals at that point. I mean, yeah, sure, you want a player who's going to score a lot. But the first thing I looked at when the Arvidsson trade happened was, what was his relative expected goal share? How did the team look when he was on the ice opposed to when he was off the ice? And he led the team. And they led the Predators at that time. So it's like, I know the Kings are really kind of delving into this analytics. Because I remember, I don't know if it was last year or the season before that, but the state of the franchise, Luke Robitaille, one of the things he put up on the screen was like all these in-depth numbers, analytic numbers, like expected goals, like goals saved above expected, like slot shots, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So this team knows. And what's so weird too is like, when you look at a lot of these actual like these Jay Fresh models and decisions and all these models that have these like projected standings, it's like, I feel like the Kings have really good individual players in terms of like analytic numbers, but then their WAR, like their wins above replacement, for some reason it doesn't connect with those models, and the Kings are always below.
Yeah, I have a theory. It's so funny you mentioned that, because I was actually thinking about this earlier. I'm gonna throw it out there. Let me know what you guys think, but. I'm also some assumptions on how they come up with their models, but it's not even like because the Kings are below in a lot of different models, right? And I just wonder if the Kings are a team that is so like, we talk about their depth, but they're missing that star, like they're missing those stars, you could say. And I just wonder, like,
Kopitar's never been a quote-unquote star to people.
Like a McDavid or a Crosby,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And when you look at like a those individual player models that they're breaking those up and they're coming up with, you know, I'm kind of simplifying it, but, you know, I look at the defense group for the Kings. If you take that, those defensemen as individual players, to me, there's a lot lacking. However, when you take those defensive players, you put them in the Kings system and their structure, well, look what you're seeing, right? So it's as if, like, if you put, I don't know, Gavrikov and Englund and Mikey Anderson on Colorado, I don't know if they fit on Colorado. You see them, like, they have Devon Taves and Bohm Byram who are going to skate circles around you. That's not those guys, but it's a different team. It's a different structure. It's a different system. So I just wonder, like, if it's...
But the PDO podcast said the same thing about Byfield. They're saying the way that Byfield plays, he's in the perfect system for how he plays, where if he were playing on Carolina, he'd probably be struggling because they play a completely different system against what his skill set is.
So that is where I think... maybe there's a I don't know if disconnect's the right word, or maybe that's where the misses are, is just, you know, and they do the best they can. The bottles are the best thing that we, and they're going to be right way more than they're going to be wrong. You more often than not, there's always going to be exceptions though. And it does seem that the Kings are always below a lot of expectation. I just think if I look at the Kings as an individual and take all of them out and put them all in a vacuum and just like, this is it, they're probably behind some teams. You input them into the system that's being run, and all we're saying here is how good of a job Todd McClellan is doing too, if you can kind of read between the lines here. So I think when you put them in the system that they're being run in, which is at the end of the day all that matters. Listen, I was not a fan of the Gavrikov trade. We all know that. I thought he is not my type of player. He's not my type of defenseman for 2023.
Wasn't what the team needed.
2024. But obviously, they were like, well, shoot, we play this 1-3-1. We need a big body who is smart enough with his steps, you know, knows when, and who's available, right? And it was Vladislav Gavrikov, and he fit, you know, and it's like, okay. So, I just think it's so much to do with the system that they're put in that – that's why you're seeing Gavrikov flourish. That's why you're seeing Andreas Englund have such a good season, where if you put them in other spots, it's probably going to look totally different.
It's like when you're playing Shell, when you have to get all the different skill sets together and you get a plus three or plus five.
Yeah. So it is fascinating, to be honest with you, but it makes it interesting. And that's what makes the preseason talk fun. Like, everybody at the end of the day, I do think though, I think you need, you know, some stars. I mean, you look back to the Kings Cup. I mean, Quick was at that time a star. Drew Doughty was a true 1D, you know, and even after Kopitar, you had Jeff Carter, who was still a big time goal scorer, Mike Richards. So there's a little bit of a difference. And you could say that they're in a very similar build, right? Kevin Fiala, Pierre-Luc Dubois. So it is a really interesting discussion, but I think that maybe the reason that they do fall short, and I've always had a little bit of like hesitancy about the blue line with LA, but in the system, it's working.
Yeah, that's why Tom McClellan needs to be front runner for coach of the year, just the job he's doing this year. And that's why I was so disappointed last year when he wasn't even a finalist and the team was doing as well as they did. Even before that, the year before that too, it's just like, this team, like, McClellan deserves a ton of recognition for how well this team's playing. Because, like you just said, like, you have a bunch of these guys who just haven't put it together when they were away from the Kings. And now they're playing out in L.A. You have Gavrikov, who's, like, now a top five, top ten defenseman in expected goal share in the NHL. Andreas Englund and Jordan Spence are, like, not even, like, one of the better defensive pairs on the Kings. Like, one of the better defensive pairs in the NHL.
Fascinating.
Systemically. It's insane how well they're playing. Grundstrom's looking great. I mean, you have all these like diamonds in the rough that Rob Blake has found and Todd McClellan has been able to mold together to kind of create this immaculate team, almost is what we're seeing in the regular season. Man, I mean, they deserve a ton of credit.
Blake Lizotte's another one.
Yeah.
I reference this article sometimes because I always, it was the first, like, I think it might have been the first article that I wrote for Hockey Royalty that Blake Lizotte should be 4C and not Anderson Dolan. They didn't have to do that. Like, Anderson Dolan just scored a bunch of goals as a fourth line center. He was a Kings draft pick. all signs pointed to this is Jared Anderson Dolan's job. But obviously they saw some things, and that's the reason why I wrote the article, but they saw things in Blake Lizotte that were like, there's something here. And everybody thinks nothing of it because he's not a big guy, but the kid can play, flat out can play. And he's another diamond in the rough.
Seems like the teams are full of diamonds in the rough. And maybe you guys might find some diamonds in your sports betting here with DraftKings. Our official code is THPN. Hockey fans, light the lamp this winter with DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NHL. New customers can bet $5 pre-game money line on any NHL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. If that wasn't enough excitement that you can't hear it in my voice, then turn small bets even to bigger payouts with same-game parlays. Combine multiple bets like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more for your shot at even a bigger payout. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet $5 on any NHL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Code THPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions may apply. See our show notes for details. So we're going to let Joe geek out a little bit here. Not that he hasn't already. He's thrown out a lot of verbiage going there. But Joe, behind the scenes for all you fans, he's getting in the dirt. He's getting in the muck. He's opening up the video, creating his own stats. He's showing me so many charts. I'm sick of seeing charts. I just want to eat real pie instead of seeing pie charts. So we're going to have this segment here that it will probably be betterly named going forward, but we're going to call it Royal Numbers for now. Where we're going to dig into some of the stats here where maybe the eyes don't match the stats or the stats match the eyes and what we're really seeing and why lines are competing. Joe, I know I'm giving you too open of a forum here, but let's narrow it down to one of the guys that I like here. So you're not talking for a full 45 minutes. Let's start with Grundstrom, because I liked what you said about him in the chat. Let's start with Grundstrom and what we're seeing, not only from a scoring standpoint, but how he's helping that fourth line navigate.
Yeah. So first for Grundstrom, I joked at the start of the season, he's the per 60 king. Cause what is he? He was one of the top goals per 60 last year. Same thing this year. He's second in goals per 60 this year. He is what I say earlier, third, I think. Yeah. Third in shot attempts per 60 on the Kings. He's fourth in overall shot contributions per 60 on the Kings. So he's very much involved in the offense. What I've liked about him, what I've tackled recently, and like I said, I'm halfway through the game, so I'm going back and I'm tracking zone entries. So as a player skates the puck into the zone with possession, or does he pass the puck to a teammate with possession in the zone, or is he just dumping it, get it off my stick and get it into the zone type of thing? So I'm just again trying to, this is influenced by what Corey Schneider does in all three zones. And I'm, you know, he does an incredible job that can never be replicated, but you know, he has a tall task to do it like every NHL game, which is crazy. So I figure I will try to do this for the LA Kings and at least be able to have something that's a little bit quicker, you know, to see these stats. And the thing that stood out in the, like I said, about half the season that stood out to me with Grundstrom is, you know, a lot of times in the fourth line, it's like, don't make the easy play. Just get the puck in, forecheck, whatever. That's not Carl Grundstrom. Carl Grundstrom is somebody that enjoys carrying the puck in. He's got a carry-in rate, or controlled entry rate, I should say, of 60%. It's probably, as I finish up and like go through the rest of the season, that'll kind of come down a bit. But I checked last year for the games that Corey Schneider did track for all three zones, which wasn't every single game. Again, it's impossible. But Grundstrom was 58% with his carry-in percentage on all three zones too. So like that kind of means that, okay, I'm on the right track with what I'm doing because Corey is in line with him. But B, like Carl Grundstrom, he's not here to just get the puck off his stick. He wants to carry it into the zone. And when you're a guy that has the shot like him, he's always somebody that's kind of carried a little bit of an elevated shooting percentage. Not rocket science why he wants to carry the puck in the zone and try to get a shot off. So that is what's really stood out to me more so than anybody else on that fourth line, especially is Carl Grundstrom really, really is like, he wants the puck on the stick and he wants to carry it through the zone and into the zone. possession.
I got to stop you a little because these comments are cracking me up here. Green Hicks and Hockey says, Joe is a guy who likes going to the DMV. Lee follows it up with, Joe actually reads the terms and conditions. And then Green goes, yeah, he would be amazing homeowners association president. You guys crack me up in there. Appreciate you guys. That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
That is good.
So getting off, or go ahead, Russ. Were you going to comment about Grundstrom?
No, I was just going to say, like, yeah, Grundstrom, he seems like he's been like the perfect fourth line winger. And I know a lot of people want to move him up in the lineup, but it's like, I liked what McClellan said. It's like he's doing so well. Like that line is doing so well together. Why change it? There's no reason to.
And what I love about it, and there's other players that you may not think of that I've kind of like, interesting, like as I go through this. But Grundstrom, like you watch him. Next time you get a chance to watch a game, just Grundstrom gets the puck in the neutral zone. Because there's times where like you would think, okay, it's understandable if you're going to dump this one in because maybe you got pressure or whatever. He tries to eat that pressure. Like he protects the puck and he tries to lag the puck into the zone so he can maintain that possession and try to make a play with it. And I appreciate that as somebody that is a staunch believer in puck protection. And I want the puck as much as possible. He doesn't want to give that puck up. And I can appreciate not wanting to just dump it in for the sake of dumping it in.
I can only imagine what your practices are like. It's like, oh, one of your high schoolers dump it in. Laps. Well, you dump it in, you take a lap.
So it's funny. It's funny you say that because I one of the things that I really am pushing is to run a practice and like we do a scrimmage and there's zero dump ins. Like you are forced to make a play. Like obviously in a game, I fully understand there are times where you need to dump the puck in. I get that. But like in general, don't dump the puck in ever. In a scrimmage, like in practice, make a play, figure it out, regroup to the neutral zone and figure out how to make a play and attack with speed and go into the zone with possession of the puck. That's the name of the game. For me.
You don't have him run the 1-3-1 though, do you?
I do not have him run the 1-3-1. Okay.
Small potatoes here, Joe. Small potatoes.
So, so getting to the next one, which I thought in the chat was interesting, and was the yin and yang that is our third pair. So, talk about how Jordan Spence is quite easily one of the best carrying players on our team, and pairing him with Andreas Englund, who is the exact opposite. How does that line work, and how does that match what you're seeing on television?
This could be the most fascinating pairing I think I've ever seen. Because I think in general you think of, well, defensive defenseman with an offensive defenseman, right? But if you think about it, and like to a quick aside on this, like Mikey Anderson, love how Mikey Anderson, like he's a defensive defenseman. Everybody would, I think, agree with that. Mike Anderson's not dumping the puck in if he can avoid it. He wants to skate the puck in or make a pass. He wants a controlled entry, and his controlled entries numbers are pretty good. So that's what's a little interesting with Spence and Englund is they couldn't be any more apart. Looking at shot contributions, Jordan Spence leads all defensemen in shot contributions per 60. Andreas Englund, dead last. And in terms of controlled entries, now Jordan Spence doesn't have that many entries. Like in the games I've tracked, it's like just under, I think he's got 10 entries, nine entries in the games I've tracked. Not that many compared to some of these other guys that are getting that in a single game. But when he does enter, it's controlled. Of those nine, six of them are controlled. Like he wants to skate the puck in the zone, which I think anybody that's watched the Ontario Reign or the Kings for that matter, not too surprising. But it's just like I literally like, so his controlled entry percentage right now is 66.7. Andreas Englund, his controlled entry percentage is 7. He wants that puck off of his stick. He has one. I've tracked one controlled entry and 13 dump-ins for Andreas Englund. It, to me, it's just so fascinating how they're like not even remotely close to the same. Because again, like it's not as simple as, oh, offensive defenseman, defensive defenseman. Because I use the Mikey Anderson example. More than willing to skate the puck into the zone and likes to do so. In fact, he skates it in. He's willing to skate it in, I think, more than Doughty is, which is probably surprising to some. It's just, I love that pair. like you have always said, it's kind of a unique pair and it seems like an odd fit. And it, I guess it kind of is. They're like the odd couple, but holy hell, do they make it work? It's really interesting to see this, if this continues.
I think last I checked, Jordan Spencer, I think it was yesterday, he led the league for league all defensemen expected goal share.
Yeah.
It's weird because, like, I almost wondered, like, I hope this isn't the case, but it's like, I almost wonder, like, how much Jordan Spence is actually carrying Andreas Englund. But then you, like, you watch Englund play, and it's like, he's not making any mistakes out there. He's not causing any problems. He's still playing pretty good defensively. He's not maybe doing too much offensively, but I mean, I think the way that Jordan Spence has been able to impact the game and kind of just translate what we've seen, what we saw in the queue with him when he was a draft prospect, to what we saw in Ontario Reign, is just translating right to the NHL. It's maybe his defensive game kind of needed a little bit more polish when he first got into the league, especially in that playoff series against the Oilers. Like, of course, that's probably that makes a lot of sense when you're a rookie coming into the league like that. But man, this year, he's just, like I mentioned, he's been one of the better defenders on the Kings this year.
The one thing I'll say about Englund, I'm not going to say I've noticed it a lot, but I've noticed it enough to where I'm going to mention it, because we talk about that 1-3-1 and the lefty. Mikey Anderson is always among the best in the league at his zone entry defense, in part because the system is totally built for that, but also he's great at reading and timing when he's going to make his plays. Gavrikov, the guy is a giant, so his reach makes it really difficult. The one thing I've noticed with Englund is he has gotten beat on that side. I'm not going to say it's often, it's not consistently, but I can't remember if it was last game or if it just happened to be a game I was watching the other day that I was tracking from earlier in the season where he just flat out got beat on the left side of the 1-3-1. So, you know, he is, and I don't mean to take much away, he's exceeded my expectations, but there's those moments where it's like, oh yeah, he is still very much like, we got to remember who he is, but he's kind of like, I don't know if he just is in that, in those few times that this has happened. And the reason it may only be a few, but you do not see Mikey Anderson or Gavrikov get beat. You just don't see it, like, cleanly anyways, maybe the, on a forecheck or whatever, deep in the zone, but they don't see them get beat at and around within 5 feet of the blue line.
I think you said it best. Is just he's exceeded our expectations in terms of Englund, right? I mean, we were talking about, like, I mean, I know a lot, there was some discussion whether we thought it'd be Englund or Bjornfoot. I was leaning heavily into just to see what they could get out of Englund, and he's just, Englund's been outstanding, I think, in terms of what we expected him to be at this point of the season. I mean, it's like, we just thought maybe they'd float in Bjornfoot, kind of switch him back and forth at some point this season. But I'm just like, no, you have to keep those two together. And it's just been another diamond in the rough find for Rob Blake.
Yeah, I like it. Let's switch it over to Joe here. I'm going to kind of let you kind of have freedom on this one. Where is the biggest surprise that you found when Staten not only slot passes, but zone entries and this, and then has it heightened your view of a player, or did it change your view of a player?
So the one thing I'll say is, I guess I'm not shocked, but like, it's not like retranslating at least yet on the score sheet consistently with like Pierre-Luc Dubois. Like I said before, this guy owns the zone entries. Like, he is lugging is probably more apt, the pucks into the zone. And then I look at his shot numbers, pass numbers, and he's got the third highest slot passes on the team. So like, you see he's there. Like, maybe there isn't that final product quite yet, but there's a lot he's doing offensively that's like, okay, there's a play. It's not like he's nowhere to be found on the ice. I think what was funny was I tracked the Ottawa Senators game. That whole line was a ghost when it came to zone entries, which was kind of fascinating because it totally lines up with what we were all Kings fans talking about. Like, it just seemed like that line did nothing on that road trip. And at least in that game that I looked at, that was the case. There's a player, Randon, that it's just like, just continues to like reaffirm or affirm everything that everybody's saying about him that it's doing. You look at Quentin Byfield, like, second highest. The Kevin Fiala leads in slot passes that I've looked at, and Quentin Byfield is tied with Trevor Moore for the second most. So he's doing his job there. Quentin Byfield is very good when it comes to, I've got him at a 63% controlled entry percentage, which again, I suspect that'll probably level a little bit as I get more games and I do the other games. But again, another player, as everybody probably can see, more than willing to carry the puck in with pace through the neutral zone. So I don't know that either of those are totally surprising, although I guess I'm pleasantly surprised. If you would have asked me before the season, is Quentin Byfield going to be the top slot passers on the team? I probably would have said no, right? But it's now seeing it, and he's really kind of turning along, or that part of his game, the playmaking part of his game is coming along. It's really nice to see. And lastly, Mikey Anderson, again, I mentioned it before with his entries. Like, he wants to bring the puck into the zone, and he wants to do it with possession. He's actually second only to Jordan Spence in terms of controlled entry percentage. And again, he's definitely got more. He's got double the entries that Spence has. So, like, he wants to carry the puck into the zone. So I know people think, well, Mikey Anderson, defensive defenseman, he's not there to just dump pucks in and control his blue line. He wants to bring the puck into the zone more so than any other defenseman, which was good to see, frankly.
He's been jumping into the rush a lot more this year, Mikey has noticed.
Yeah, but yeah.
Just kind of go back real quick on Dubois. I love what McClone said. I think it was after the Florida game, where he talked about how they were just kind of trying to unlock a little bit more in his game away from the puck, because with the puck, he's just excellent. And McClone said that, and it just, you watch the games. Like Joe just said, like, every time he gets the puck, it just seems like his number one goal, once he has the puck on his stick, is I'm taking this straight to the net, and you have to just try to stop me. We saw it. He literally crashed into the post trying to do that. I mean, even his game, that goal he scored against Minnesota, where he kind of, whether he put a stick on it or whatnot, we've seen it a handful of times. I think he did it against Winnipeg. But, I mean, I love that he knows that the type of player he is. He has the size. He has the strength. And he has the ability to just take the puck, and once he gets it, just go straight to the net. And we're seeing some goals that way. I think I forget which game it was. Maybe it was or I forget which one it was. But, I mean, the one where LeFerrier scored the rebound goal, I think it was either against Pittsburgh or whatnot. But, I mean, yeah, just a lot of the drives that Dubois is getting to the net has just been so noticeable. And I think that's the best part of this game.
Esper coming in here with another little joke here. All right, Timmy. Here's your DVD copy of your game with me speaking over it for an hour of your analytics. Review it by tomorrow. Give me an essay. I like it. So just kind of for the fans in here, we got everything squared away with Google. So the Super Chat's back in there. I know that some people want to steer the direction of the conversation. And with Super Chats, you guys can do that. I'm going to throw Frank's up here. Can we talk a little Zimmer? Cohen Zimmer signed a little three-year entry-level contract. In case people don't know for who he is, he was the 78th overall in the round three of one of the Kings draft picks. Right now, with 18 games with the Prince George Cougars, 9 goals, 19 assists for 28 points. So if that's projected over the full 64, he'll have 32 goals, 68 assists for 100 total points. Guy can shoot, guy can fight. He was one of our favorite draft picks. What do you guys think about him signing the entry level right now? And when do you think we can see him at the end of the year in the A?
Maybe. Yeah, that's a possibility, but I love it. Yeah, I mean, this is a player that was really exciting in terms of his draft highlight tape. I mean, obviously, we don't really know much about the player when he gets drafted, but now we start following him a little bit and see what he's been doing with the Prince Cougars. I think it's kind of a more of those player that they saw, especially at the rookie faceoff. I think he played on almost every game there. And we saw him a lot during the preseason, especially with most of the team in Australia. He got to get some preseason action in, and maybe the Kings liked what they saw. I mean, it's that kind of Dustin Brown kind of like winger or player where he's got that size, not willing to throw it around a little, or he's willing to throw it around his weight a little bit. And if he can kind of figure out that skating, it seems like the Kings have really don't mind players maybe that are a little bit more, scouts are a little bit more critical on their skating. We've seen it with Arthur Kalia, Brant Clark, Jake, all these top draft picks that didn't come in with the best skating ability, but Kings don't mind. They seem like they're, like we've talked about, they're a system team, and if the player can adapt to the system, then their skill set will shine. So I love the signing.
Yeah, this was certainly one of the draft picks that we were excited about, Brandon. Real quick on that, Russ. This is, and Randon, feel free to steer this the other way. This is why we get trouble sometimes. You mentioned the Kings are a system team and you're drafting like these players. They're not concerned about the skating and stuff. I wonder, like, are you good with that? Is that, because like Todd McClellan's not going to be here forever. We all know that. The coach's shelf life in the NHL, they just don't last that long. Now, hopefully, Todd's doing a great job here. So hopefully they're able to win around in the playoffs this year, maybe go deep so he sticks around, obviously. But like, in theory, by the time Zimmer gets to the NHL, it could have a totally different coach and in theory, totally different system. So I wonder, like, to your point, Russ, it seems like they're doing that with a purpose, and maybe it is for the quote unquote system. So I wonder if this is something that Rob Blake and company are going to be like, this is how we play. So if it is a new coach that comes in, you're going to have to be on board with this type of thing, or if they're going to let a new coach, whenever that time comes, kind of dictate that. I just find it interesting.
Yeah, besides, that'd be a good question to ask Rob Blake, like, how much does the team's overall, or the organization really, I mean, I think the Rain play the same kind of system. How much does the organization's overall system attribute to your drafting or your player acquisition department, anything like that? Like, do you guys focus on, okay, can this player contribute to how we play, and whether it be the 1-3-1 or just overall rush chances, because this team loves to play off the rush. Mm-hmm. Like, does that contribute to whether you draft a certain player or whatnot? So that'd be a good question to ask.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because I follow a lot with the draft with the Niners and how they play. And obviously Shanahan's been there for several years, T-Mac just the same. And I think you look at it with the top end picks, you want them to be good at a lot of things, if not everything, right? You want them to hit at all facets. You know, the only thing that you could really knock about Brant Clark was, you know, his forward and back skating and maybe his deep presence, right? Like, but everything else is at a high elite level. And as you get further down the draft, you want maybe one elite trait or two very good traits that you can build the game off of. And, you know, Zimmer's, his shot is never, no matter what system you're playing, a guy that can put 30 plus goals in is always going to be appreciated and nurtured. I think how the team plays, although it's going to come from the guy running things. And on the Niners, it's Shanahan, right? John Lynch kind of just follows what Shanahan wants to do, and then they draft those type of players. But they draft guys that are team guys. And you're seeing with the Kings, they draft a lot of captains. They draft a lot of smart players. They draft a lot of guys who buy into the organization. And I think maybe that is the main formula. And then they have a good skater here, a shot guy here, or a stay-at-home D-man here. And there's really no rhyme or reason. Whereas you look at like Carolina, all they do is draft skill, regardless of what they look like. And it's just, all these guys can play make. Well, I mean, are they going to have a well-rounded team? I don't know. It's interesting to see how that goes. I think for me, like I said, if I were to pinpoint what the Kings' value is going to be, guys that buy into what they're doing, guys that work hard, and guys that are good above the neck. And I think with them drafting a lot of team captains, drafting a lot of those types of guys, I think it's really like that's the type of atmosphere they're building. And not only with their draft picks, but with the people they're bringing in. You look at Phil Deneau, has been a great locker room guy, Mikey Anderson out of college, and even though he was a draft pick, but he played a lot of college captain there. Victor Arvidsson wore a letter in Nashville most of the time. So, like, these types of guys are going to be the ones that are you're bringing in. Even the Cam Talbot signing, right, was a veteran who has a good head on his shoulders, wanted to come in and just play the system and be a part of the team. And so I think, as you mentioned earlier, there's no superstars to this team. And so the sum of the parts the sum has to be greater than the individual parts in order for us to win a Stanley Cup. And that comes from locker room guys. That comes from guys that fit where you need them to be. And I think it's interesting how they're building this team, and it's working. And so I think that's kind of going to trickle down to how they draft it and be those types of guys. Turcotte's a prime example of that. I mean, Turcotte was a guy who played behind Jack Hughes and never really got – and Zegras, and never really got the shine on a team that was loaded. And then he's been – went into Wisconsin. They had a captain who was a senior, really kind of had – So he's kind of like bit his time, but he's always doing whatever he needs to do to fit in. And he'll play on, like right now, he played on the third line and still had 2 points, right? So it's like he's doing whatever he needs to do. He fits wherever he needs to fit in order for the team to be better. And he's not really worried about anything else. And so I think it's those types of players who really they kind of covet. I mean, I could be wrong, and maybe within that question, Russ, you could ask that as well. But that's kind of how I view the organization as a whole.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, culture has been a huge part in a lot of these players they're bringing in. And maybe the biggest question mark, kind of Dubois, obviously, with some of his antics in the past. But, I mean, when you have a locker room that's built with players like Kopitar, Doughty, I mean, Vladislav Gavrikov has been just a monster in terms of his play and presence in the locker room, like Trapper Nine just mentioned. I mean, Mikey Anderson. I mean, even Kevin Fiala, which is kind of weird because he seems like when you see a player like Kevin Fiala, he's kind of that, like, you almost think of like a diva kind of esque that play style. But he's really a great locker room guy. His presence, his relationship that he's growing with a lot of these young players, especially we see him kind of with Quentin Byfield. Phil Deneau is another player that is a huge locker room presence. So that's what's so good, because you see a lot of these teams that maybe are having a lot of issues in terms of like players getting sat, in bench in third period, or like even just in Edmonton, like what's going on up there or whatever, like everywhere around the league. But for some reason, like the Kings, it's just like you don't really have those issues. There's no divas on this team. It's just a team that's a group of players that have been brought in that have bought into the system that they're playing in. And it's working. And that's the thing, is like they're not only just playing that system, they see the results happening. When you just look at the standings, you look at the scoreboard. And I think that was so disappointing at the beginning of last year too, is like we were seeing this team play so well and it just wasn't hitting because of maybe goaltending, or not maybe, but obviously goaltending. So you saw this team that was playing so well, and then all of a sudden the goaltending was just letting you down. But now this year, like, you're getting the goaltending with Cam Talbot, who just should be a Vezina finalist at this point. It's season ended now. I mean, yeah, the sky's the limit for this team right now.
I like Green's comment here. Kevin Fiala gives mustache lessons.
Perfect.
To all his teammates. That's where all the wisdom comes from, is in the lip lettuce. So we have one more topic here talking about international hockey. I think everybody wants to see more international play. Hockey's really have fallen down on that. I mean, you see it with the World Cup and all kinds of stuff with the rugby and soccer and everything like that. But baseball is getting brought back to the Olympics. They had a great World Baseball Classic here in the United States this last year. And so international play has really fallen off. And Russ, I'll let you take this one here. What have you heard about maybe the proposition that is being led forward?
Yeah, so what they're talking about is, obviously, it seems like Olympics are just going to be a foregone conclusion at this point, that they're not going to be participating, which is just so disappointing. So you were kind of hoping that they'd be able to put together another World Cup of Hockey. But from, I believe it was Greg Wyshynski from ESPN that had that article coming out that said that they're trying to get together a 4-team tournament that includes the USA, Canada, Finland, and Sweden, and then play for a 4-team international series. And I believe it's 2025. It's just probably my biggest gripe I have with the NHL right now, is that their unwillingness or inability to figure out a way to get the NHL players involved, whether it be in the Olympics or just any sort of international competition. I want to have the opportunity to actually root for the Kachucks, right? I'm from the US. I want to root for Brady and Matthew Tkachuk. I want to root for Austin Matthews. Like, I want to see those players put on that USA uniform. I want to root for Matt Roy in a USA uniform, even though it's probably not going to happen, but it is what it is. Like, I want to see those players go up against Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Sidney Crosby. It's just so annoying and so frustrating that we haven't had that opportunity to see those players. And then the fact that they're just going to kind of throw something together with only 4 countries and leave out other great stars, like, Germany has great players, Draisaitl, Stutzla, Seider. I mean, you're going to leave out the David Pasternak's. Like, it's just, I just don't get it. Like, to be honest with you, like, it just felt like a huge miss for the NHL. Like, they want to talk about growing the game, and yeah, that's great. They're going to Australia, they're going to Sweden, and like what we saw, like, look at what you saw with William Nylander in Sweden, the impact that he had. Just he had fans lined up around the block just to get a picture with him. And this is like, this is what you have the opportunity for, and if you're in front of you, if you're the NHL, and for some reason they just can't figure it out. And it sucks. It really does suck.
Well, it sucks too because the U.S. looks like they could have a freaking hell of a team.
That's kind of also what I'm just
so right? not only that now, but you look at, I think it was Pronman and Wheeler came out with like the top 50, and over half were from the United States. Were the top 50 for prospects.
I mean, things are looking up for the States, but yeah, this seems just like half-assed. I mean, when it's something that's put together like this, and there's four teams, and there's this kind of just reeks of money to me, like just a money grab. So I don't know. I want international as much as anybody. But like, do it right. I'd rather you not do it than do a four team tournament. I don't know. That to me, that's just I don't know what the point of it is. I guess. I mean, yeah. I mean, it would be fun. Don't get me wrong. You're gonna get USA Canada a couple times. Like it's fun, but like eventually you want those games to kind of be a part of something bigger than whatever the hell this is going to be. So I don't know. Hopefully, it's at least like stepping closer to the next big thing, whether it's a World Cup or whether it's an Olympics, you know, hopefully this is like getting somewhere closer to that. But I can't say I love the idea of being thrown around.
I think the time frame is September. Like, it just feels like we just went to Australia, right? Like people stepped away from the States. They played for a week. I mean, they played two games and then they came back. Players are getting it regular, you know, getting in shape, ready to go. I think September feels right. Or they just have to take their week-long break that they take and time it with the World Juniors, but then you're taken away from their spotlight. I think that they need to be in the Olympics. I think they just need to figure that out. That's usually in December. It is what it is. Just pair the games, you know, take that big break or whatever. I mean, I don't know. And then
done it before.
Yeah. And they've done it before. And then I think have almost like the World Baseball Classic. They do it every 3 years, but do it every 4 years, but have it World Hockey Championships. A year off, Olympics, a year off. And then in the years off, like, just schedule some friendlies. Like, let's get USA Sweden in Sweden. Let's get, you know, Czech Republic versus Germany in Munich. Like, let's get some friendlies going on. You really want to build the game and do that kind of thing. Like, could you imagine I think it's rumored that the stadium series is going to be in Munich next year, according to Spitting Chicklets, I think.
I think it was Merle that said that, yeah.
Yeah, so, cool. Why wouldn't you want to have a friendly with Germany and whoever out there? You know, it's like, it really makes no sense. And like, fine, have relegation. Or have a Team Europe from all the leftover teams, right? Like, have six or whatever, or have five and then have Team Europe, or have seven and Team Europe or whatever. But it's one, it grows the game. Two, it you can easily figure it out and fit it in. Like, you have AI now, like, making all these schedules like 3 years in advance. Like, you can't just figure this out. Like, it makes no sense. And it seems to me like it stems like a bunch of big wigs trying to fill their fucking pocketbooks, and there's really no reason or rhyme to this. Pardon my French, but it gets me heated. Like what got me into hockey was Canada, USA in the Olympics in double overtime. That's what got me into hockey. And the fact that we're not seeing that, or future generations can't feel that and wear a Team USA shirt or Team Canada shirt or whatever and get into a sport that they love is BS.
It's a huge miss. Like, we haven't seen McDavid, Michael Matthews. Like, we just haven't.
It's terrible.
These guys in the Olympics and that type of setup, and it it sucks. It sucks.
Dude, I mean, yeah, the USA team is going to be absolutely stacked. Love it. It's gonna be insane. I mean, you have a down the middle of Oh, Jack Eichel, Jack Hughes, Austin Matthews.
Pretty good.
Ridiculous, right? And even their goaltending. Like, take your pick. Connor Hellebuck, Jake Ottinger, Thatcher Demko. Any one of them. And it's just, like, that's the thing. Like, you mentioned the World Baseball Classic. Like, it just happened this past year before this last season. Players got hurt. Yeah, it sucks. Mm-hmm. Look at Edwin Diaz, the guy for the closer for the Mets. The guy who had that cool entry that would like that took that was like the whole culture of the Mets all 2 years ago. And then he got hurt, and then it's like they couldn't even do it anymore. So it's like, yeah, it sucks that players get hurt. But if you talk, I mean, I remember listening to baseball players after that was over. They're like, yeah, we would do it again. And we're only talking about for the Olympics. We're talking about once every 4 years. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about an every year thing. If players get hurt, yeah, it's going to suck. I get it. And you might lose some money. Teams are going to be impacted. But I think it's going to – the actual competition and the fanfare that you're going to get from that tournament, it's gonna totally outweigh all those possibilities.
Not only that, it's going to thrive the economy of whatever city that thing is in.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Trapper9 coming in here with the first super chat of the day. My message is public. Yes, it is, good sir. And King's Thanks, Rule coming in with another one. Hey, super chat. Hey, back at you, King's Rule. Appreciate the money. Appreciate Thank you, guys. Thanks, I know guys. We work tirelessly for you guys, and it always feels to be good to be appreciated. So thank you guys for those super chats.
I'm going to throw something else, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Because why the hell not?
Yeah.
We're talking about international play, so we're off to something different. What about – because there's a lot of buzz right now about 3-on-3 and what to do about 3-on-3 because it's getting a little bit dull. You got all the teams going back and the players will curl back. Like, what do you guys have a thought on the 3-on-3? Do you like the 3-on-3? Would you extend it? Do you want to go back to ties, get rid of the shootout? What are your kind of overall thoughts on that? I'd be curious. Russ.
I think it's fine. I don't have a problem with overtime and shootouts. Like, I don't understand when this became a huge issue. Like, it's like, I get it. Yeah, overtime has kind of maybe got a little bit more mundane. It's still pretty exciting. There's still times. I mean, every time I see a 3-on-3 going on ESPN Plus or whatever game it is, like, I'm turning it on because I know something exciting is bound to happen. Or even the shootout. Like, yeah, it sucks. Like, especially for the Kings when. Kings haven't wanted a shootout yet. Like, okay, I get it. 5 minutes, 3-on-3. If they don't score, go to a shootout. Totally fine with it. I don't see the issue. And it's funny because I looked at some of the stats, and shot attempts in overtime are down. I think they're down by 2 shots per 60 in terms of both teams on the ice compared to when the league first implemented 3-on-3. But expected goals are actually up in 3-on-3. So yeah, they're not just throwing the puck on net. They're waiting for their chances more, but we're seeing better scoring chances because of it. So I just don't see a problem. It's something that's not broken, so there's no need to try to fix it.
I just think when it first came out, it was just the Wild West. Just bam, 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 bam. And everyone's like, oh, like, what is this going on? This is great. And then teams catch on. You know, and it's the same thing. It's rules that are being made. One, it's for player safety. Like, you can't keep having overtimes to where, like, it's 2 or 3 overtime games in the middle of season, back-to-backs, all that kind of stuff. So, the 3-on-3 is fine. Like, if they wanted to make it – I'd be fine making it 6 minutes. If they want to, like, just extend it another minute, maybe we get more games aside in regulation. And then, you know, shootouts, I mean, you're looking at some players are way better than others. And it offers – not that it's a huge avenue to get into the game because you have to play 5-on-5, but – it offers you a toolkit to be able to make the roster, you know? And, like, I think you look at, like, TJ Oshie, right? I mean, he's a solid player. He's not an elite player. But when it comes to the shootout, like, he's the first one up every single time. So I think it kind of lends itself to other skill sets. And most of the kids that are getting drafted nowadays, they spend hours upon hours on ponds or whatever, practicing trick shots. There's videos on YouTube every single day of these people doing weird stuff. So, you know, I don't mind it. I don't think it's really a problem. I think it's a problem for Kings fans because we can't ever seem to win a shootout. And every time it goes to OT, I feel like we're going to lose the game, as bad as that sounds. But it's what are we really going to do?
Like, yeah, I don't think it. I kind of agree. I really don't think it's as broken as people think it is. And the shootout, I don't know. Like, it's like fighting. Like, people can complain about fighting all they want, but there's 20,000 people that stand up in that building whenever there's two people drop the gloves. And I don't care who you are. The shootout's exciting. It's fun to watch. It's a skills competition. Is it gimmicky? Sure. But it doesn't mean it's not fun. I think it's fun still. To me, the ideas about getting rid of offsides and getting rid of the red line, horrible ideas, because coaches are going to adapt to that so damn quickly. They already have it in their binders what they're going to do to slow this thing down. None of that's going to work. I think you have to make the coaches in general are going to be risk averse, especially in the NHL. So they're going to try to not lose the game. And so they kick the can, they get to the shootout, and then it's a coin flip, whatever. You need to make it so if you really want it to be more valuable, make a regulation win 3 points. If you're going to have shootouts, make a win in overtime. You don't get the full 3 points for an overtime win. You get 2 points. You need to like put a little incentive, I think, or in order, because otherwise the coaches are going to find ways. They're not going to risk things. They're not going to risk losing the extra point. They'd rather just flip the coin in the shootout. So try to get them to go for the extra point by winning in regulation, or go for the extra point in winning it in overtime, as opposed to going to a shootout where you automatically get like 1 point, for example. I also had no problem with ties. I think I'm crazy in that sense. Maybe it's because I like soccer. I didn't have an issue with the way the system used to be. If you either won, you lost, or you tied. And that was this. That's just how it was split. Every game is worth 2 points. So I think where it does kind of suck right now is like the standings after a while. Everybody's picking up points. It's like, holy hell, you can't gain ground. No, people aren't catching anybody. So that gets that's kind of annoying later in the season. But again, if you had regulations worth 3 points, it puts a little bit more oomph into that, I think. So to me, that's what it is. Any idea about taking away the red line or getting rid of offsides, I genuinely don't. Shot clock, horrible idea. I genuinely don't think any of that accomplishes the goal. I think coaches will adapt to that in 2 seconds, and it'll be the same problem over and over, if not worse. So I was just curious your guys' thoughts, because I've been seeing it kind of talked about on the Twitter and other podcasts lately. So I figured, what the hell?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Olympic scoring would be something, the 3, 2, and 1, you know, how they kind of figure that out there. That might be something interesting to get. But ultimately, it's not a broken thing. I get it.
I don't think so either.
I think if you add more, like if you take away rules or add rules, like then isn't it more gimmicky? Because then you're changing the game of hockey just for this one period, right?
What's more gimmicky than a freaking shot clock? And if you put a shot clock in hockey, come on, right? Yeah, you're right.
That we're just gonna have a buzzer going off in the arena. Well, like, that'd be
because so then weird. What happens? So say there's a buzzer that goes off, and then what is it? A face off? Or does the team, or does the other team just get the puck?
Get the puck behind the goalie's net?
Because if it's a face-off, why would you, if I'm, you know, I don't pick a winger on a team that's on the ice and is like, well, I'm not going to take this shot from like the wall. I'll just wait. We'll get a face-off and we'll bring out our best face-off guy and win the draw and get possession again. None of that, I think, does anything to address what it is, because it's all about coaches being risk averse.
Yeah. At the 3-2-1 system would be great. I think there's something they could like do something with icings and overtime too, because I feel like that only benefits the team that's actually icing the puck. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know, Rustin, I don't know if you played roller, I don't know, because roller hockey, I suspect, is a lot bigger out in California than it is here in Western New York, but like I played in a at the time it was a pretty big roller hockey tournament locally. There was teams from all over, teams from Florida, teams from California, and I didn't play like roller hockey. Like we were a bunch of hockey players playing roller hockey. We were all man for man. It was just not even close. But the way they played, there was no offside. They just hang a guy. And so what are you going to do? Well, you're going to go down and you're going to have a guy. It's just going to become like this four corners thing. It's just like it was horrible, because we were trying to go. We were trying to play Rand in that wild, wild west and go, go, go. They were just like, no, we're just going to hang a guy and we're just going to spread it out. And it was horrible to play. And I think that's what it could turn into.
Well, I think that's going to do it for us tonight. Appreciate you guys in the chat. We are 40-plus strong going there for most of it, so we always appreciate you guys getting in there. The chat was live tonight. Really appreciate it. Go on our website, hockeyroyalty.com, to see all the new articles coming out. Great articles every single day coming out here by our crew. Again, that's hockeyroyalty.com. Please follow us at hockey_royalty, at RandoCommando24, at JW Paterino, at NHL Russell, and for all your Rain news, at Kopitar4HOF. Kyle is doing great stuff there. We do have a special announcement next week, so keep your ears out for that. And if you guys want to make some money this weekend, DraftKings code THPN. Appreciate you guys for the super chats. Appreciate you guys for listening. Again, thank you for the 700 subscribers. Quest to 1,000 begins now. Quest of the Stanley Cup begins now for the LA Kings. I like it. I like it. I like it. Go Kings, go. Have a good night. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Appreciate it.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.